All right, welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 119. The news for this week. Well, first, I want to say the premiere for Joseph James's new film, which stars Sean Astin. It premieres in the first couple of weeks in December. It's going to be huge. He needs all the support you can give, so please share the trailers and the social media pages for The Freemason Movie. You can find him on Twitter at The Freemason Movie and also at Joseph James News. He's also on Facebook as well. And he's really busy getting some things together, but it's going to be an exciting project. And this is a really great way that you can help him out. Another thing I'd like to mention is I did interview Brother Eugene Gross, who is the past state master counselor for the Dima Lay. And I'll have that interview up in a couple of weeks. The next interview that you will most likely hear is Anthony Mongelli, and he wrote a book called The Craftsman Symbology, Selected Symbols of the Entered Apprentice Degree. And I believe he's also working on other books as well. He writes regularly for the Living Stones magazine as well. So be ready for that interview soon. I'm going to get right into the paper for the week. This week's piece is called Stonehenge, From Whence Came You? Stonehenge, an ancient structure filled with mystery, the subject of speculation and rumor studied and analyzed by generations of men. Scientists and producers of fanciful mystique alike have founded a challenge which thwarts the analytical minds and the discerning eyes of man. What is this strange and little-known edifice which stands alone and aloof on the plains of Salisbury? To quote a statement by Russell A. Herner, author of Stonehenge, an ancient Masonic temple, I contend that this majestic structure is in fact an ancient Masonic temple. This structure, or temple as I will call it, has survived the lapse of time and the ruthless hands of ignorance and the devastation of war for many centuries, end quote. The author does not equivocate. He does not apologize. He does, however, theorize very convincingly. Let's look at this phenomenon on the open plains of southwest England. Salisbury Plain is in Wiltshire, England, about 7 miles from the town of Salisbury. On the flat plain surrounding Stonehenge, one can see large burial mounds similar to those found in the United States, Moundsville, West Virginia, for example. Unanswered questions come flooding into one's mind as the mystery of Stonehenge is viewed as it spreads over the plain. How was it built? What genius supplied the scientific knowledge which made it possible? When was it built? And by whom? Questions unanswered now and possibly for all time. This was no small undertaking which our ancient craftsmen took upon themselves. It was monumental. Imagine what they faced. No high-tech equipment which today's builders use so routinely. No colleges teaching today's technology and sciences. Quarries for the special stones located 20 to 240 miles away. No beasts of burden, only man's backs and strong limbs. A river between the quarries and the building site. A project of a magnitude exceeding the Sears Tower in Chicago or the Bay Bridge in California. For building such a modern project involved many tasks which individually were not difficult. Building Stonehenge involved many tasks which individually seemed insurmountable. To the average mind today, it was the impossible dream. But there it stands for all to see, the improbable, impossible, inconceivable project, completed by a culture which we consider to be uneducated and without artistic temperament. At a point directly northeast corner of the altar stone, there is a break in the circular embankments for an avenue, nearly 40 feet wide, which leads to the only element of Stonehenge which is outside the circle. The heel stone is a massive stone 20 feet high with 4 feet buried in the plain. It is planted at the incline of 27 degrees toward the center of the structure. It is estimated to weigh over 35 tons and is 256 feet from the center of the altar stone. Just within the embankments is a stone 3 feet thick, 7 feet wide, and nearly 22 feet long. This is thought to be the spot where animals were slaughtered as offerings to deity. More is involved in the construction of Stonehenge than meets the casual view. It is located and constructed by an exact scientific formula which can be derived much scientific data and many astrological readings. Just inside the Aubrey holes, there are 4 station stones forming a rectangle, 108 feet 8 inches wide and 262 feet 3 inches long, with its long dimension perpendicular to the northeast axis. At this latitude of 51 degrees 17 minutes north latitude, lines drawn through these 4 stones plot the rising and setting positions of the sun and moon at midsummer and midwinter. If Stonehenge were moved as little as 30 miles, this rectangle would have to be laid out as a parallelogram without right angle corners. At the summer solstice, about June 21st, the sun rises directly over the tip of the heel stone, its rays passing through the Saracen arch and striking the center of the altar stone. That one archway is 6 inches wider than all the rest. With this in mind, picture, if you will, this scene which may or may not be purely imaginative. It is night. The darkness is broken only by a candle or two, or perhaps by the dim light of a setting moon. A group of men marching in double file enter the Saracen circle. They are dressed in ancient costumes of leather and rough homespun cloth. They carry implements of the builder's trades. In the center of this group, walking between the columns and guided by two of the ancient, is a young man, an initiate. They circumambulate the Saracen circle, stopping at strategic points while voices from the darkness instruct and admonish the initiate in their midst. As dawn approaches, they pass through the open end of the trilithons into the blue stone horseshoe and wend their way southeastward until the initiate and the guide stand behind the altar stone, at its center facing northeast. The rest of the group file slowly back until they form a double line from the altar stone to the Saracen arch at the extreme northeast limit of the circle. All is quiet, the darkness dims, the initiate has time to think on what he has been told and the things he has seen. The circles of stone about this group shut out nearly all the light as dawn grows near. Suddenly a glow appears and a guide turns to the initiate's head with the command, "Look to the east." The entire area is encompassed by two earthen embankments separated by a ditch 17 feet wide. The inner embankment rises 7 feet above the plain to reduce the possibility of cowans and eavesdroppers. The outer mound is approximately 400 feet in diameter. Within the circle, at a diameter of 286 feet, are 56 pits called Aubrey Holes, filled with solid chalk. Several of these have been excavated and found to contain human bones, spawning the assumption that they are burial spots for the leaders or officers of those who used the site. Further toward the center, with the inside a diameter of 97 feet 4 inches, is the main part of the structure, a circle of 30 stones nearly 4 feet thick, 7 feet wide, and standing 13 feet 6 inches above ground. At a diameter of 77 feet is a circle of blue stones 6 feet 7 inches high in the southwest, tapering to 2 feet 4 inches in the northeast. We now approach the inner sanctum of Stonehenge, a horseshoe formation of 5 huge stone groups called trilithons, with the open end of the northeast. These mammoth units consist of 3 stones each, 2 upright members varying in height from 25 feet 6 inches in the center of the closed end of the horseshoe to 20 feet above ground at the open end. The third stone forms a lintel across the top and is 15 feet 5 inches long, the width of the 2 uprights. These stones are about 3 feet thick and 7 feet wide, and at the top are carved in the form of a mortise and tensin joint to hold the lintel in place. Within this impressive group is a second horseshoe of round blue stones, 2 feet in diameter, varying in height from 9 feet 3 inches at the closed end to 6 feet 6 inches at the open end in the northeast. These are set at a diameter of 39 feet. Central to all the other parts of the structure is one of the 2 most important elements. It lies flat on the ground, and it's a green stone with flecks of mica throughout. It measures nearly 2 feet thick, 3 feet 3 inches wide, and 15 feet 9 inches long. This is the altar stone. Some mention should be made of the 2 color elements used in Stonehenge's construction, the green altar and the 2 blue stone units. Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry has this statement, quote, "In all the ancient mysteries, this idea was carried out with green symbolizing the birth of the world, the moral creation of resurrection of the initiate," end quote. Thus we have the theory that the initiate took his obligation on the green altar stone at Stonehenge, quote, "the creation or resurrection of new life," end quote. The blue stones are thought to be indicative of the blue, which is indelibly attached to masonry. From all ages, blue has symbolized truth, sincerity, and fidelity. Further, Masons met in outdoor lodges under the blue canopy of heaven. Thus, today we meet in blue lodges. A sudden shaft of light bursts through the Saracen arch as the sun rises directly over the tip of the heel stone. It crosses the space within the circle, strikes the altar stone, and shines directly on the face of the initiate. Light. The initiate has received the light. After further instruction, he is admitted to the inner circle of these rough men who somehow knew many things of science and nature. A final thought. Imagery? Perhaps. Perhaps not. We may never know, but this is the indisputable fact. The construction of Stonehenge, like the Great Pyramid of Giza, was done with knowledge that would be difficult to find even today. It is done with the scientific skill which was thought to be developed many centuries after these men lived and died. The how and why we may never understand, but the fact remain. An ancient Masonic lodge? Who knows? And one may ask, does it really matter? For whatever we choose to believe about Stonehenge, it offers material for intriguing, hypothesizing, and endless interesting conversations. My brothers, I give you the mystery that is Stonehenge. All right, now that was actually from an article published on MasonicWorld.com. I'll have that as the downloadable PDF. So I hope you enjoyed it. Speaking of the apps, this is how we fund the show. We have an app available for the iPhone and tablet and smartphones in general. It's available for Apple, Android, and Windows 8. The app lets you listen to the show streaming, no syncing. It lets you mark your favorite episodes, download your favorites, and gives you access to the papers that we read and a Masonic wallpaper for your mobile device under the bonus features or extras, as they are called. The app is $2, and all the proceeds go right into the show. We're also on Stitcher Smart Radio, so if you are on Stitcher Smart Radio already, that's great. You can check us out there. But if you're not on Stitcher, then you can download it for free, register for free, and use the promo code WentzKMU with no spaces, and then Stitcher will send us $1, and this costs you nothing, but you're supporting the show. Another way you can help support the show is through our affiliate, Onnit Labs. If you're into healthy living and fitness, click through to the Onnit site from our website, wcypodcast.com, and at the checkout, use promo code WCY for additional 10% off. Onnit sends us a little kickback, and again, this is directly used for the show. The last way you can help out is just by donating. Our donations are run through PayPal, so it's totally secure. Thanks in advance for all of your help, everyone. A big thanks to many of the repeat donators, my brother and writing partner, Johnny O, illustrious brother, Steve Harrison, and many others. Also, I need to say thanks to all the brothers who help out in other ways. And you all know who you are. Tahiri, Walk, Hosler, Creason, Gordon, Shirley, Sepulveda, Gomez, Shimeon, Greg Knott, Nickum, James Fry, and all their significant others. My wife, the list goes on forever. You guys make this happen and keep the fire not just burning, but maintaining a raging inferno of passion for this thing that we all call Freemasonry. So thank you guys. Next, I want to talk about Masonic outreach. You guys know by now that I'm on the Grand Lodge's Masonic Charities Committee in the state of Illinois, and my job is to talk a little bit and promote the Masonic charities. So each week when I can, I like to read a little bit of a story about how the Illinois Masonic outreach has affected and helped. But I also remind you, no matter where you are in the world, brothers in Australia, in Surrey, England, in Philadelphia, California, Ontario, no matter where you are, your Grand Lodge has charity funds that has stories just like these. These stories wouldn't be told without the generosity of brothers like yourselves. So let's tell another great story about Masonic outreach. Our Illinois Masonic Outreach Services director received a call from the wife of a 60-year-old Brother Mason who was hospitalized for an extensive period. Most of the interview was conducted with the wife since the brother was in the process of getting blood transfusions. This brother had survived 6 bypass surgeries and numerous complications. Up to the date of the interview, he had received a total of 59 blood transfusions over the years. Even with Medicaid, this couple was experiencing a large amount of out-of-pocket expense, such as travel to and from the hospital, which was a 4-hour ride one way. Housing for the spouse was $30 per day in a shared room. They were behind 3 months in their mortgage payment, a total of $1,200. Housing at the hospital guest facility came to $900 a month. How did the Illinois Masonic Outreach Services help? Well, this couple received a one-time payment of $1,200 to be used for the backlog of the mortgage payments, the monthly assistance in the amount of $900 per month to cover hospital housing while the spouse remained with her husband during the illness. Unfortunately, this brother Mason passed away after being in the program for 2 months. Our outreach services paid for his funeral expenses due to the destitute situation. His widow is currently receiving financial assistance and will receive it until her situation improves. So there you have it, another amazing way we can help out. Unfortunately, the brother did pass, but we're taking care of his widow. Now here in Illinois, we have something called the Society of King Solomon, which is a group or membership which is awarded for extraordinary giving to these charities. This membership is gained with donations of $500 or more. But don't worry, I didn't have that kind of money either when I joined. I bequeathed the money from my life insurance policy. It guarantees the society will have the money to fund the charities long after I'm gone. So check out your Grand Lodge charities. Let's get into the famous Freemason of the Week, Sir Jimmy Shand, 1908 to 2000. Jimmy Shand was born in East Wemyss, Fife, on January 28, 1908. Jimmy's first musical instrument was the moothie, or mouth organ, before his father, himself, a skilled melodeon player, taught him to play at an early age, and when the 14-year-old had to leave school to go down to the mine shafts, he played his melodeon at social events, weddings, and competitions. In his mid-20s, Jimmy started a job in a music shop in Dundee and switched to the chromatic button-key accordion, the instrument he stuck with for the rest of his life. In 1955, he recorded the hit single Bluebell Polka, which reached number 20 in the charts and earned him an appearance on the BBC television pop music program. He went on to sell millions of records during a musical career spanning more than 70 years. In 1999, he received a knighthood for his services to the Scottish culture at the Palace of Holyrood House, Edinburgh, by Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales. Jimmy was truly a very rare Scottish national treasure. A statue in his memory has been erected in his adopted town, in Fife. There is a commemorative plaque on the statue which has an inscription that should be familiar to all Scottish Freemasons. Happy to meet, sorry to part. Happy to meet again. Jimmy Shand was a member of Lodge Robert de Bruce, number 304 in Ladybank, Fife. I know it was a short one this week. We had to keep it a little bit short for bandwidth purposes. But before I go, I wanted to say that you can now follow the Midnight Freemasons at Midnight Masons on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at Wentz Camu, and you can follow fellow podcaster Juan Sepulveda at Winding Stairs 33 and Rob Lewis at Far From Centered or Robert P. Lewis. Of course, Juan Sepulveda's show is the Winding Stairs podcast, which is amazing, and Rob Lewis is doing his show while serving in Afghanistan, and his show is called Far From Centered. So check those out. Be sure to check out the Midnight Freemasons website, which is www.midnightfreemason.blogspot.com. We publish 3 articles a week, and they are always new. Also, if you like what you're reading there, you can check us out monthly in the Working Tools magazine, the largest independent Masonic magazine in the United States. You can follow the Working Tools on Facebook and Twitter at TWTMag. The website to subscribe is twtmag.com, and you can get issues basically however you want them, which includes newsstand, PDF, or print, or even both. So head on over and support the magazine. It's amazing. The magazine is put out by Brother Corey Sigler. If anyone has any questions, you can always email me at wcypodcast@gmail.com. That's also how you can follow on Google+. Please also find us on Facebook, give us a like, and engage the page in some conversation. We have a lot of fun over there. Check out Joseph James Films, Fraternal Ties, and of course, Brother Jeff Koch and his company PB&J Water, providing one of the most important things in the world, clean water. He serves entire counties, and he's an expert. All his parts and filtration systems are made right here in the United States. Well, I'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. And for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.